From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. Ahoy there, my hearties, and welcome back aboard the Reeve Gauche. I had a very successful voyage to the Turks and Caicos Islands with my last guest, Gavin Hastings, and where I left him in a bar with a bunch of fellow Scotsmen and a bottle of Loch Lomond whiskey, where he was regaling them with stories about the 1990 Grand Slam. I thought that was probably the best time for a sharp exit. Thank you to all of you who have been in touch about the name of my new parrot, who it turns out is a boy. On the shortlist for names include Dasher. It's been submitted by Mark from the West Country, who is a Somerset County Cricket Club fan. Morris, suggested by Mr. M. Breen of Edinburgh. And John, in homage to John Parrott, the snooker legend, that's actually been submitted by a few people. I'm going to see. I haven't thought about it yet. There is a bottle of Loch Lomond to the lucky winner. And any more names for my boy parrot will be considered.
I'm the captain.
In other news, Paul, my gout-ridden, half-Cypriot steward, continues to serve up, well, to be fair, half-decent food, and is largely loathed by the rest of the crew. I might leave him in Australia because, landlubbers, it is Australia where I have been sailing since we last met for our appointment with one of her most decorated sons, the diminutive and brilliant George Gregan. And so the Reeve Gauche arrived late last night into Sydney Harbour, and we are about to welcome George on board. 139 caps for the Wallabies, a World Cup winner's medal, and endless honours that befits one of the finest scrum halves ever to have graced the international scene. I just can't wait to catch up with him. And a very warm welcome to the captain table, Georgie Gregan. How very nice to see you. Got a nice chair for you. Make yourself at home.
Thank you, Joel. I'm very, very happy and very proud to be part of the conversation this evening. That's for sure.
Well, I know down due to this sort of flu thing that's been going around, I would have come and see you in person there in Sydney, but we're just going to have to pretend you're on the pirate ship. And we're actually, I know the listeners may be disappointed, but we're actually doing this via Zoom. So first things first, though, despite this being a virtual experience, I have to get you a drink. It's late in the evening there in Sydney. And because it's pirate ship, I do have rum on board, but this is a classy ship, as you know, and we take the high road here on the Reeve Gauche, and so I've got some phenomenal Loch Lomond 12-year-old single malt whiskey, if that's okay. Firstly, do you like it?
I absolutely adore Loch Lomond 12-year-old, and I'd like actually to have that just on the rock. I know that's sacrilege in that part of the world, but I'd like it on a nice, big, juicy rock, please.
Okay, and just one ice, just one rock?
Just one rock, a nice, big rock, and I'll be happy as Larry.
Okay, and do you prefer peated or unpeated whiskey?
Unpeated, please.
Okay, I've got a very incompetent steward called Paul who has a limp and a gammy leg, and he may drop some things, but I will see.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks in advance.
Well, yeah, don't count on it. Anyway, this is nonsense. We're talking rubbish. Your early days, Georgie. As a young boy growing up, I've known you for many years. You're sporty and you're competitive as anything. What were your sporting memories as a young lad? Not playing, but so much watching. What was that sort of growing up thing in Australia?
Yeah, it's a good, like, watching sport in Australia. There's sport everywhere. Like, I remember some of the big memories for me. I grew up in Canberra. And so nearby, there was a sporting team which got into the New South Wales Rugby League competition called the Canberra Raiders. Ended up becoming one of the great teams through the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s in that competition. And so we used to go, well, I say we, my father and I used to go to Seaford Oval in Queanbeyan, which is about 25 minutes out of Canberra, which is in New South Wales, which people might get confused listening to this saying, what's he talking about? But it was only about a 25-minute drive from home, and you cross borders and then you're all of a sudden in New South Wales, and that was where the Raiders played. And that was where you got a real sporting experience. And rugby league's totally different to rugby union. It's like they like to play on a bit about the working class, but I think it's community-based, and I think that's what sport is. And that was really reinforced with my early days of going to watch the Canberra Raiders play at Seaford Oval.
And it was your dad who took you, so that was very much a father-son thing that you did?
Yeah, it was a father-son thing, standing up on the hill, not sitting on the hill. It was cold. Canberra gets really, really cold. Everyone has this ridiculous, and I guess, well, not ridiculous, but they do have this image of Australia being like it's the Great Barrier Reef. You're seeing the coral, you're swimming with turtles, it's always 30 degrees, you're putting on like 30-plus sunscreen, and it's like that 365 days of the year. It's not like that in Canberra. Like, it blows to minus 8 degrees Celsius with a wind chill factor. It is freezing. It can be as cold, if not colder, than Scotland. I know there'll be Scots listening to this and they won't believe me. They'll be calling BS on me, but Canberra's friggin' cold, and that's where I grew up. And when you're sitting on the hill, as I said, standing on the hill at Seaford Oval, watching a rugby league game in the middle of winter, yeah, you know you're playing a winter sport.
And your dad, did he have a love of rugby league over rugby union, or was that more down to the geography that there was more league than union where you lived in at home?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, actually. He actually grew up in Strathfield, and he went to school there, which is in Sydney, and that had a big rugby league tradition and a strong rugby league culture. And he was a middle distance runner, so he had a good engine on him, as he likes to tell me. He he won many records. I still haven't seen them, but like, I'm not going to call.
Has he got a trophy room? Did he have a trophy room?
My old man's not the kind of trophy room, but he had a few sheds. I helped him build a couple of sheds. That's another story. But ultimately, we ended up loving rugby league because of like his experience with it and growing up with it at school. And then I grew up with it at an early age. And then when I went to school at about year five, so I was 10 years of age, I ended up getting introduced to rugby union. But up until that stage, rugby league was the sport that I grew up with and played and loved. And I still love rugby league to this day. But obviously rugby union's had a huge part of my life.
So you'd have been asked this question a load of times, but never by me as a pirate. So your first love was league. Did you play league, and could that have been an option for you?
Yeah, I played league. I played from midgets. You'd like this job because you're a tall man. You're quite a tall pirate, as my memory serves me correctly. I was a midget, and I played midgets. So midgets is sort of under sevens. So you go midgets, under sevens, then you build up. I played midgets to under nines. I don't think, and I've heard Lawrence Delalio on this podcast as well. He knows I never grew beyond a midget, and so I always was forced to play scrum half. I had delusions of grandeur. I wanted to be a Johnny Wilkinson. I wanted to be a Stephen Larkham and play with number 10 on my back, but I ended up being a number 9, a scrum half, and that was based on just the fact that I couldn't grow any taller. But I learnt the game from a young age, rugby league, and I think when you do that, when you're a playmaker, when you're a halfback, or like you're a ball player in rugby league, get the ball in your hands, you learn to take the ball to the line and all the things which help you with rugby. They're very similar in many ways, different in many ways, but very similar.
And so who are your, you love cricket as well. I think you played a good level of cricket, didn't you?
Yeah, I play cricket. Obviously, you're talking about a winter sport here. Like, it's freezing in Canberra. It also got really hot in summer. And like growing up, I loved cricket. And during my formative years as a young man, I was watching the great West Indian teams. You're talking about the Clive Lloyds. You're talking about the Viv Richards. You're talking about, you know, Whispering Death, Michael Holding, Eldeen Baptiste, Colin Croft, Geoffrey Dujon. Like, I could go through it all, you know. Like Larry Gomes, they were just an amazing team. Richie Richardson, yeah. And then Malcolm. I think I mentioned. And then with the Australian team, you had DK Lilley, you had Rodney Marsh, Rodney Hogg, you had the Chappell brothers, a young David Boone, a young Alan Border, Kim Hughes. I love cricket, so I'm a bit of a cricket tragic.
And I know you and I have discussed that at length. We both are. So of all of that choice, rugby league, rugby union, because those early in the early 80s, the Wallabies really came into their own as well. And you know, Australian cricket's always been strong, although recently it's been lovely to see the Ashes go the right way. Sorry, had to drop that in.
I think he lost the last one. Sorry.
Must be interference. But who are your absolute hero? Who is on the, what posters of sports people were on the George Gregan wall growing up? Who were your absolute idols?
Yeah, I think it's cricket. So I would have had a bit of IVA Richards there, and I would have had a guy called Paul Sirenan, who was a rugby, which won't mean anything in rugby union, but he was a rugby league second row, big, tall, athletic, could offload, step, really special sort of second rower. And the team I supported then, even though I lived in Canberra, was the Balmain Tigers. So they lived in Sydney. So, well, they played in Sydney and I lived in Canberra, but that was my team. And then with the Raiders, it was an amazing team growing up in particularly my adolescent years. You had a Ricky Stewart, you had a Laurie Daly, Mal Meninga, so on and so forth. They won, they played three grand finals in a row. So they were definitely, I know they were on my, they were definitely.
Presumably you've met most of these guys as you then went through your own career and you got to meet your heroes. That must have been an amazing privilege of your own privilege of playing rugby for Australia.
It's spot on. And I think the one which really stands out to me is going to the Prime Minister's 11. So the Prime Minister's 11 was played down in Canberra. So it was like a little bit of back to the future. So you've got some of the older players and some of the new players coming in to the Australian national team, players of significance, so to speak, who might have potential to go to that next level. And they played in a 50-overs-a-side game against the West Indies. So I went to that game at Manuka Oval, which is a beautiful, traditional... I haven't been, and I still do, this is on my bucket list too, Jolo. I want to come and watch some cricket in the UK. But it's one of those traditional cricket grounds, and not the MCG. The MCG is a mecca, but it's the same space as the MCG Manuka Oval. And that's where they played the Prime Minister's 11, and went and watched the West Indies play the PMs, and then seeing Michael Holding, Joel Garner bowling off their run-ups, and then Geoffrey Dujon's like a cricket pitch plus behind the stumps, and he's catching it above his head, and you're going, and you couldn't actually see it until you heard it. And then you go and see some of like the War Brothers were playing, and it was incredible. And so I got to get my little bat. I had a little bat to sign, the signature bat.
Don't you still have a little bat?
Yeah, it's still got the Harrow bat. Still got my little Harrow bat. It was signed by the West Indian team, and they were all like so happy to see you, so warm and welcoming. And I remember I think it was Eldeen Baptiste, and he was beside Viv Richards. He says, "Hey, little man, you want me to sign your bat?" And I was like, "Wow, they've actually seen me." And then you signed the bat and it was like, wow, that was really impressive, because they could have not been in that place, but they were.
And did that have an effect on you? Do you remember that when you became an idol to young kids in Australia, when you hit the big time, do you remember how that those heroes of yours had treated the young George Gregan then? And yeah, did it resonate?
For sure it resonated. But at the same time, Canberra's a big country town, and I think in many ways, that was the same case when you went and saw, I mentioned some of the wonderful players who played for the Canberra Raiders who are rugby league players, and you see them in, and you would bump into them in public places, and they'd give you the time of day, they'd ask you about this and that, how are you going this weekend, they'd know what you're doing. It was really that kind of a place, and I think that does have a lasting impression on you.
So, George, you've travelled the world playing, I mean, I don't know how many caps, 138, 40, something like that. So you've played in a lot of stadiums, but you've also watched a lot of sport. So forget it as a player. What's your favourite sporting stadium to go to as a fan, just as a punter?
You know, that's a really tough question to answer. It's a really good question. I know many of your interviewees have said the same thing. But if I took it away from rugby, because I'll split it. Can I be a bit of a pain in the neck and say, let's split it? Outside of rugby, I've been lucky enough to go to some wonderful sporting events. I've been to a couple of Super Bowls, which has been amazing. But to me, and I still do the Open, there's a lot of things I haven't done on my bucket list, but going to the Masters and being on Amen Corner, I was actually on the corner where Mickelson hit it between the trees in 2010 and hit that incredible shot. Like, the thing about that place is if you watch it like I am on a Golf Tragic, you actually feel as though you know everything about the course, but when you go there, you don't. You keep pinching yourself. I think every day I said to the group I was with and good mates, I said, let's pinch ourselves every time we get to Amen Corner because, like, it's unreal. To me, that's bliss.
And let's say you're in a footy match, a rugby match, cricket, doesn't matter. Maybe not Augusta because they have a different type of sandwich there. But what is your favourite food? It's half time. Maybe it's a bit cold. What does George Gregan? I know you're a bit body beautiful and you do all your stretches and all that rubbish.
Yeah, that's
all
rubbish.
That rubbish. But just what is your snack of choice at halftime?
I'm a bit like Lol. I heard Lol. I'm a burger and chips. And I wash it down with a nice lager. Not these fancy pale ales these today. I'd like fair play to them. I just want a lager, a nice, good quality burger and some chips.
And you are a sports tragic fan, all the rest of it. Do you prefer the live event being at events or do you like being at home and watching and really analysing or do you like being in the pub with mates? I know there's an answer for all of those, but if push comes to shove, are you a kind of couch potato sports fan or you get me to the stadium, I want to drink in everything?
Yeah, I do enjoy it. There's a part of me which loves watching the sporting event in my own space, totally. And I've heard many of your interviewees saying the same thing, but nothing beats a live event except being there. You don't experience it at the same level. There's an energy, there's an experience, there's smells, there's everything that you do. I'll give you an example, and I mentioned that I referenced it before. I've been to Super Bowl. So I was at the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 51, when the Patriots were down 28-3, 3 minutes into their third quarter. No, 3 minutes out from the third quarter, never to win. So it was the biggest deficit ever. The only team which had come back from a 10-point deficit, I was there in 49, was when they beat the Seahawks. So I was in Houston, and I'm a Patriots fan. I've got all the crazy pictures, I'm a tragic. I love the Patriots. From early doors, and they end up winning, having gone from 28-3 to 28-all. They flip a coin, they go to extra time, and then Brady does this drive, and they end up winning. It was an incredible Super Bowl. To me, I could watch that live, and I'd be emotional, like I kind of am now, like thinking about it. Like I actually think about it now. But when you're there, and you can actually experience, you can hear the calls, you can hear Tom Brady calling that play. Nothing beats that. That's the beauty of live sport. Nothing ever replicates being there live.
And you mentioned that emotion. Have you ever, or did you then, or have you ever cried watching sport, actually proper tears of either elation or frustration and disappointment?
Yeah, well, I get a bit teary watching sport. I got a bit teary, and I was on the plane, but I was when Tiger won last year. Like that got me emotional. When I landed and they said he won, like I found that just incredible. When Roger, I know him.
Your pal,
but
yeah, yeah.
Roger, no, I don't know him, but Roger Federer played Rafa Nadal down here a few years ago in the Australian Open final. Both of them had come back from injuries and they weren't expecting to play in the final. They played this epic five-setter and I was happy for either of them to win because it was just an amazing final. And then Roger wins and you know, and then when he does the post-match speech and explains what went into just getting themselves to play again, let alone being in the final. I get emotional on that stuff because not that I'm those guys, but I know what goes into getting yourself in that position and yeah, fair play to them. I sport it to me is the ultimate drama. You don't get one or two takes at it. It's there. Like, I was there when, like, I've heard the great friggin' Rory McIlroy on your podcast, which is great to listen to. And I was lucky enough to be at Congressional when he won his first major, having shot 80 about 8 weeks or 10 weeks beforehand at the Masters in the last round. And the way he played that week, the way he carried himself, and I saw him with his father, or staying at the same home, like, the way he carried himself that week, like, I think about that now, I get emotional, because you just, the sporting events, which and everything that transpires over that period and what goes into that moment, yeah, you get emotional because you know they've earned it and they deserve it.
Well, my listeners will have picked up on this, that you are, I think you used the word golf tragic. Loch Lomond whiskies are, as you know, the spirit of the Open Golf Championship. So I'm going to ask you a few specific golf questions. Have you?
I could fail badly.
Oh, no, yeah. No, it's not a test. But have you ever been to the Open Golf Championship?
Never. And on my bucket list.
Is it really?
Yes, definitely on my bucket list.
And why the Open? What makes it special to you?
Well, I've been watching a lot of, like, as we all have been watching a lot of, like, to me, Lynx golf is true golf. Like, I love all golf, but you've got to use your imagination. The wind blows, things change, and you've actually got to play proper golf, to me. That's how golf's meant to be played. And so if you're the Open champion, like, to me, that's the epitome of a golf champion. And I think... And
so would you take the Open over a Masters if you had the choice of one major? Would you take the Open over the Masters?
I'll take any major, if I'm serious. But the Open, it's special. It really is special. It's the home of golf. You think of St. Andrews. You think of – it's just different. I love the Masters, don't get me wrong, but the Masters is played on the same course. It's set up – I know weather conditions change and everything. But the Open is—it's unique. Lynx golf is totally different golf. You got to go to places which you don't—you get uncomfortable playing Lynx golf.
Tell me, you've played—I know—in actually our former life when I was at HSBC, you've played in pro-am teams. If you could have your own dream pro-am team of four with you as the captain, you can have pros, you can have family, celebrities, and I'll make it easy for you. I don't need to be in the pro-am team, just so you can take me out of it, and that's okay. What would your dream four ball be?
My dream, am I part of it? So I've only got three left.
You've got three left, okay. You're the skipper, and you can pick the course because you'll even have an overview on that, I suspect.
So I'd probably go, it's tough. I go Tiger, Jack, And so there's only one left. I'd love to go Gene Sarazen because I love Gene Sarazen. Maybe it's a small man thing. I hit his little four. He hit his forward little over the water to create that, like, double eagle at the 15th at Augusta, which just made it. It was the turf rider. That was his forward turf rider. So I know my history. I'd love to play around with him, but because there's two Americans already. I'd go with Scotty because Scotty's won the US Masters. I'd go with Adam Scott. I haven't played with Scotty. I'd love to play with Scotty. That'd be a pretty cool four ball.
That's a good four ball.
And I think there'd be some good chat.
There'd be good chat, and you'd be out driving all of them down.
No, I wouldn't. I'd be chasing them all, but I'd be filling all their divots. I got you, boss. It's all good.
And you haven't been to an Open Championship, and I'm sure that Loch Lomond will be able to help as a sponsor of the Open in so it's be nice to them. But have you played any Open venues? I'm sure you have when you've been on tour over to the UK. And if so, what was your favourite Open venue?
You know, I'd like to say yes to that. The two times I was going to play St Andrews, once the weather just came in, as can happen in Scotland, believe it or not, and you couldn't get a tee time. And the other time I had a bad back. I had a bad back, so I wasn't golf fit, but I was rugby fit if I didn't play golf that weekend. Do your math on that. But I've played some wonderful courses through the UK and Ireland. I've played Portmarnock, Old Portmarnock. I've been lucky enough to play in Wales at the 2010 course at Celtic Manor. But, yeah, I still, Scotland's still on my to-do list. There's a lot of things on my to-do list in terms of golf, which is beautiful.
Well, and the good news is that you're good friends with Big Gavin Hastings. He's a member of Muirfield and he's a member of the Royal and Ancient, so I should tap him up. He might even take you out.
Yeah, we can, we've got that. We've got good friends. We've got a good man, Drico, I've heard on this podcast, which has been fantastic. So no, there's no excuses for me. I've just got to, once we get through this COVID-19 and we're able to open the borders, yeah, just bring the clubs, clean the grooves, make sure the golf shoes are, like, you know, ready to go, clean as a whistle.
Yeah, of course.
And we can play.
Well, we'll get that sorted. Georgie, we come to the part of the show now, which I call the Captain's Broadside, where I'm going to ask you a series of sort of random-ish questions, and you just have to suspend reality and believe that you are on my 17th century pirate ship, obviously, which is called the Reeve Gauche, and there is a parrot.
I love the Reeve Gauche.
And it's a green parrot, and she hasn't pecked you yet, so hopefully that she can be a bit difficult. This is a ship. We can sail anywhere in the world. Where can I take you? Where's your bucket list?
I've always wanted to go to Belize. I've read a few things about Belize, which is sort of just past Mexico on the way to the Caribbean. I want to go there. Lost cities. Take me to Belize, please. Reef okay. Gush.
Well, then are you? Do you know what? I'm very
and
useful.
Good rum and some nice rum.
Like, rum and whiskey. But I've got a very handy sextant, so I should be able to get us there. And as you can see, we're sitting around this beautiful oak table-ish, and I'm going to feed you on our trip to Belize. What is the George Grieg? You choose the first menu. You get cheese from me as just a thing. So you get three courses. What is the George Griegan three course meal?
The first course is definitely the Japanese infused experience, which would definitely have to be some tuna sashimi with a lovely ponzu sauce. With nice. Just lightly marinated wasabi on the side if you want, but with that flavor, you don't need it. Let's just flip into the main. I love food from all around the world. Like I do enjoy. But if this is going to be my meal on the Reeve Gauche, it's going to be medium rare, a beautiful grass-fed eye fillet, avec frites, and a beautiful salad. It's with a beautiful like French dressing, not too rich, just a beautiful French dressing, and dessert. Are we going to dessert?
Of course we are, mate. You're on fire.
Affogato with an espresso, of course. Yeah. And do I want the potential alcohol on the side? No, I'll pass on that. Can I have limoncello?
All the way through, or just at the end?
No, at the end.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe I've made it four course, but I'm gonna go the affogato without the alcohol, but I'm gonna substitute what normally goes into the affogato, like amaretto. I'll just give a limoncello.
Well, I mean, beautiful. You've given me a lot, and more importantly, you've given Paul the steward a lot to think to. And given the guy can barely put one foot in front of another, you may get this, but we'll do our very best. And it was a good job that you hadn't thought about that question before, Howard.
Yeah. Mate, you can't ask someone about food. Look, Jolo, you can't ask that lightly. That's a deep question. You get quite emotional about food.
Yeah, when was the last time you cried ordering food? So listen, on the Reeve Gauche, you get a beautiful ensuite cabin as well. And although historically slightly incorrect, you get a power shower. What song does George Griegan sing in the shower?
Wow, that's a good question. I love Police. I just go with let's go with Every Little Thing.
Every Little Thing,
every little thing she does is magic.
Okay, that's good.
That's it.
And you can sing that well, yeah. Well, the crew will be listening, so you better be on your A game. Do you remember your first album that you ever bought?
Yeah, and again, it was Police. Everything goes to Police. Then Yada Montada.
And wow, and do you remember your first concert that you went to?
First concert I went to.
And did you go near the front first, so you can see? I mean, that's the obvious gag.
Yeah, the first concert, like, I'm trying to think of the first concert. The first concert I really remember, again, everything you think, oh, gosh, this place is boring as bad shit, but I went to see Sting in, I think it was Shed 5 or Wharf 5 in Dublin in 1996 when he just, it was an amazing concert.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd seen some concerts. Yeah, he was incredible. We went to go for just one concert. I think we went 3 nights in a row. I almost lost my voice. We were playing Lansdowne Road. And as a halfback, he meant to talk. I almost lost my voice. I almost got sacked before that game. But, like, two incredible nights. We actually watched him 2 nights in a row. Incredible.
Fabulous. And do you remember what your first car was all those years ago?
Yes, I do remember my
first car. What was it and what colour was it?
It was a colour and it was bashed up as well. So it was like a Holden HQ, which if I still had that car and I did it up now, it'd be like a Picasso. It'd be amazing. You just couldn't get your hands on it. It was an Holden HQ. It had three on the tree. So it was the old, the shift gear. And it was, I think my old man bought it for like 1200 Aussie. And it was like a Sherman tank, so to speak. Like if I was going to get an accident, I was going to get injured. But that was my first car, an Holden HQ with three on the tree.
Fantastic. And do you have a hidden talent that I don't know about and therefore the listeners don't know about? Is there something that you can, I mean, you can pass off both hands, you're a handy golfer, but is there something that you can do that people don't know that you'd like to share with us now to this global audience?
Like, you know when someone says in golf they're sneaky along? I'm sneaky okay in terms of the kitchen. Okay. I cook nice flavoursome meals. Oops. Which you'd be surprised.
Steady on, you might be cooking your own supper tonight.
Which doesn't take too long. That's the trick too. There's a trick. I don't like to cook much longer. I don't want anything to be more than sort of 45 minutes in terms of prep and everything.
Yeah.
So that's my sneaky.
Chef George
Craven. That's my sneaky talent.
And mate.
Oh, I wouldn't say chef. Chefs don't use that word loosely. It's like saying a barista.
Yeah.
Doesn't mind cooking.
Okay. He likes George Gookin, almost a chef. And mate, if we, you know, this is a pirate ship. You've gone along with the imagery very well. And obviously pirates smuggle. So if we could smuggle your most treasured possession, not a live thing, obviously, on board, and we could bury it safely for posterity so you knew it was safe forever. Is there something in your life or world that you just know you would want to be safe forever, a possession?
Yeah, there is actually. It's a beautiful thing. It's like it's my I've got three beautiful children, a son, two daughters, and when they were young, they got their hands imprinted, and that was sort of bronze and gold, and they got that set up in a statue. That's pretty amazing to me because ultimately, you know, family's everything to me, and that's pretty amazing. I'd like that to be put in a special place.
Well, we'll put that very safely. That's a wonderful thing.
Put that in the loop, please, Mr. Jarlo.
You will.
That needs to be put in the loop.
It's in the loop. Very good. I think it's known as booty as well, isn't it? Listen, Georgie, we could talk forever, and normally we do, but one, you've been a wonderful guest, and it's just a joy to have you on the Reeve Ghosh and at the captain's table. And as I mentioned, because this is a classy pirate ship, as you're already seeing, and we do things a little bit differently. We've got our own special treasure for you, and a bottle of the 12-year-old single malt whiskey from our friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. We'll be coming down to Sydney just as soon as the air routes are open up. But George Gregan, thank you very much for coming on board.
Absolute pleasure, Jarlo. Thank you so much.
Well, that was just pure Aussie gold, and what a pleasure to catch up with George on the Reeve Ghosh. It was a bloody long way to sail. As a player, he was just the most nuggety and annoying man to watch and always seemed to see Australia to the good, particularly at the last minute. But off the field, as you can tell, he is one of the finest gentlemen you could ever, ever wish to meet. Before we go, I don't want to leave any of you empty-handed. So our dear friends from Loch Lomond Whiskies are once again giving away a bottle of 12-year-old single malt. And it is delicious. This is worth winning. So to be in with a chance of that, please head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malts, that's at Loch Lomond Malts, and follow their instructions to enter. Coming up on the next show, we are returning back to the UK and heading to the fine port city of Newcastle upon Tyne to meet up with one of England's, well, I think finest ever golfers, Lee Westwood. Boasting 44 professional wins to his name, a former world number one, he has come close to winning the Masters on a couple of occasions and the Open, and been part of numerous successful Ryder Cup teams.
So don't miss the next episode of the Captain's Table podcast with Lee Westwood, dropping to wherever you get your podcasts on the 16th of June. Until then, keep your sails trim and tidy, batten down your hatches wherever possible, and keep your bathrooms shipshape at all times. Bye-bye. Thank you.